Jack was glad when one morning Mr. Bagthorpe dispatched him into Isham with instructions to buy, beg, borrow, or steal a book about how to milk goats, this information not being given in any of the library books William had fetched earlier. "And don't come back without one," he told Jack. "We must get our goat." As it happened, Grandpa was driving into Isham to purchase further supplies of angling gear. He had been sent fishing. He had been sent fishing so often of late that his equipment was wearing out. The two of them drove in together and held a companionable conversation. When Grandpa was away from Unicorn House, he seemed able to hear things much better than when in the thick of things. "I was wondering if I ought to call in and see Great Aunt Lucy," Jack told him. "I bet she'd like a visitor." He had, in fact, been instructed to do this by his siblings. "She is our last ditch," William said. "If this goes on much longer, we shall all drop dead of malnutrition." "Yourself, presumably, rather later than the rest of us," Tess told him coldly, alluding to the exhumed chops. "Please, Jack, be really nice to her," Rosie pleaded. Her chickens were a disappointment to her. They did not behave at all like the birds of the forest in Walt Disney's version of Snow White. She had never really expected them to flutter about her head or perch cooing on her shoulders, but she had expected them to be more affectionate than they were. When she threw scraps, they just ignored her and fought and pecked among themselves. Not one among them looked cozy and placid enough to be called Biddy. Rosie had given them names, but they never came when called, and so she found herself forgetting which was which. The only enjoyable part was picking out the eggs, still warm, from the nesting boxes. Even this she did not often get to do. Daisy liked doing it, and Rosie always let her because at least it wooed her away, temporarily, from Grandma and little Tommy. Mathematics was one of the strings to Rosie's bow, and she acquired a small notebook in which to keep a record of eggs laid, with the intention of producing some kind of statistics. Given Daisy's frequent visits to the henhouse, this was not easy. For one thing, Arioch dropped quite a lot of eggs, and did not own up unless he was caught out. For another, Daisy kept secretly burying eggs in the hopes that they would hatch out. Nobody could convince her that this was impossible. She said that ostriches buried their eggs in the sand, and so hens ought to be able to bury theirs in the soil. "They might even hatch out into dragons," she said with satisfaction. Given all this, Rosie's statistics were clearly to be taken with a pinch of salt. Rosie had given Jack 6 brown eggs as an offering to Great Aunt Lucy, though, needless to say, her motives for this were less than altruistic. "Make sure she knows I grew them myself," she told him. "It'll show I've got strength of character." Tess sent a tin of talcum powder from the vast store she had accumulated during her competition-entering days. Jack also smuggled a bunch of flowers, which was to be an offering from William himself, into Grandpa's car while Mr. Bagthorpe was not looking. The latter, of course, had no idea of Jack's proposed visit. Grandpa thought the idea of going to the hospital a good one. "I will drive you there myself," he told Jack, "and will myself go and see how Lucy is. She is a very strange lady, and I am sorry for her." Jack fervently hoped that Grandpa would be wise enough not to tell Grandma about this. "She'd kill him," he thought, but comforted himself with the realization that Grandpa could not have survived as long as he had if he did not have some idea of how to handle Grandma. His being S.D. was part of his way of coping, Uncle Parker said. Grandpa certainly seemed to hear all that passed during the visit to Great Aunt Lucy's sickbed. Jack had been worried that the head nurse might not let them in. However, he himself was not even recognized, Mr. Bagthorpe and Daisy having stolen most of the limelight on the previous occasion, and Grandpa, of course, had not even been there. The nurse greeted them quite warmly, probably because Grandpa had such a nice face, and even told them about Great Aunt Lucy's previous visitors. "She will be so pleased to see you," she said. "Some quite dreadful relatives came to see her when she was first admitted." "She is happy, I hope," Grandpa asked, "and her health is improving?" "Oh, she's enormously better," the nurse assured him with pride. "I think, though perhaps it is not for me to say, that her stay here is working wonders for her in every way, and she is getting on famously with her fellow patients." This sounded so unlikely that Jack wondered fleetingly whether they were all talking about the same lady. His fears were short-lived. Great-Aunt Lucy, still under her hooped cage, greeted them both with a smile. This was a real shock. Jack had not seen her smile before. "How very kind of you to come, Alfred," she told Grandpa. "And you too, William dear." "Jack, actually," he told her. "Of course. Do forgive me. I fear that I have in the past been very remiss in the matter of taking an interest in others, and hope to make up for this in the future." Jack boggled. Great-Aunt Lucy, he knew, did not believe in either the past or the future. The old lady could surely not still be under the influence of an anesthetic administered over a week previously. "There is still time," she continued, "to make redress." She had actually now used the word time. It was all quite incomprehensible. Jack made an effort to bring her back to reality as she knew it. "Here are some flowers from William and me," he proffered the bouquet. "And here is some lovely flavored talcum powder from Tess, and some brown eggs from Rosie. She laid them herself," he added, remembering his instructions. "How generous you all are," she exclaimed, "and new-laid eggs. I shall have one lightly poached for my breakfast each morning." The plot, so far as Jack was concerned, was now dense. Aunt Lucy was having her breakfast in the mornings. He stared at her for some kind of visible clue. His gaze fell on the pin fastening her bed jacket. It was one of her brooch watches. It was showing the correct time. "There is one thing, Lucy," Grandpa was saying. "You will not be troubled by wasps in here, I imagine. We are coming to the time of year when they seem everywhere. I do everything I can to keep them down, of course, but one cannot exterminate a whole species single-handed, unfortunately." "When I am better, I shall help you, Alfred," she promised. "I shall not be sufficiently agile to swat them, as I could in my youth, but I can sit with an aerosol spray on my lap and exterminate any that come within range." Grandpa took up this offer gratefully. "You will remember, of course," he told her, "that Cousin Cecil in Seven Oaks died of a wasp sting, and these things do run in families." "I suppose they do," she agreed. "I am convinced that that is the way I shall go myself," he confided, "unless it be under the wheels of Russell's car." "Oh, I do hope not," she exclaimed. She was, however, in no kind of a lather. Only a couple of weeks back she would have been in a considerable lather at such talk, and probably added wasps to the bees in her bonnet. Jack, still studying her, had the feeling that she was peaceful as never before. "I am so happy here," she told them. "Each day has a pattern. Everything goes like clockwork." She then proceeded to outline the routine of the hospital day. Each hour, each minute was accounted for. At last, it seemed, the responsibility for time had been taken out of Aunt Lucy's hands. She could lie back and leave it all up to other people. "It is sheer heaven," she said blissfully. Mrs. Bagthorpe, on a subsequent visit, learned from the head nurse the manner of Great-Aunt Lucy's conversion. It was, it appeared, the sheer, relentless regularity of hospital routine, a routine that stops for no man, that had brought about the miracle. At first, Aunt Lucy had resisted strenuously. She had demanded meals at all hours and kept switching on her bed light each time it was turned off by the night nurse, and refused to have her pulse taken. Bees in bonnets as vigorous as hers are not seen off without a struggle. Hospital staff, however, have people where they want them. They have been trained to get patients organized. In the end, they always win. Great-Aunt Lucy had been inexorably worn down. The first sign of this was when she meekly accepted kippers for breakfast, this being the first meal she had taken since her admission. From then on she had succumbed with increasing happiness to every detail of the routine to which she was subjected. She was not now even looking forward to her discharge. "We will ensure that your life continues in a regular pattern," Mrs. Bagthorpe assured her, "and once you have become accustomed to the rhythm, I am sure it will be with you for life." Mrs. Bagthorpe really did have a gift for positive thinking. Anybody who could talk about life as lived at Unicorn House as either regular or rhythmic had to be a positive thinker of titanic stature. She had to be the biggest positive thinker since Canute, or Icarus even.